What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns play and Austin Talks Sports.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world's changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh, oh. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way.
Yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, you had better get them up, get them up, get them going. It's B&E on a Friday. I meant get them out, but Friday morning on B&E, off we go. 4 hours of stimulating, we hope. Sports conversation begins right now with you on the show of the people. Appreciate you finding us, whoever you do. Early Bird always gets the worm, whether you're on 104.9, maybe 101.9 FM, AM 1260, and always streaming live and local and digital on your Horn app. Take us wherever you go. A couple touches of a button and you are listening to us live. Also on your smart speaker at home and work. And always, Mr. Godbolt, streaming live at our website. Also on the Twitch channel if you want to watch the shows at hornfm.com.
No doubt about it. Good morning to the soldiers at Fort Cavazos, Texas, the soldiers in the state of Texas, and all those that fight for us each and every day. Thank you so very much for what you do. It is appreciated, and it is appreciated by all. Thank you very much. Be careful out there, please.
Be careful into the weekend. Heat will continue to persist into the final weekend of July as we'll roll into August, to early next week. But be careful, as you say, Buck, to hydrate yourself and deal with the heat. It's should be common. Should be handling it by now. It's been 20 consecutive days of searing triple-digit temperatures as we continue to set records, and will be one of the hottest Julys on record, without a doubt. As we crank this thing up, we got a lot to dive into, a lot of fun to be had over 4 hours. It's official now from Boulder. Colorado is headed back to the Big 12. We'll dive into what it means for the Big 12 Conference, Colorado, and, of course, how can the Pac-12 survive now as a Power 5 league? Also, NFL training camp injuries, the headline, including in Dallas, the biggest one in Cincinnati. We'll get you the latest. Baseball as well, light night on the baseball diamonds with the Astros and Rangers both off and only a few games. But, man, Shohei Ohtani, what a day he had yesterday and night in Detroit. We'll recap that as well and get you into a Friday morning, and it should be a good one. Ty Henderson is here as well. The Buck is here. We'll have some fun with you. Let's start with the headlines, trending topics. Get you caught up on the news as you get up and out. UBO Business Services brings you the headlines. Yeah, it's official now. Conference realignment, University of Colorado has voted to leave the Pac-12 and rejoin the Big 12 beginning next July. School's Board of Regents formalized its future membership yesterday with a unanimous vote. Move comes with the full approval as well of the current Big 12 members and TV partners to give Colorado a full share of the Big 12's media rights deal immediately. That means $31.7 million in annual revenue, but the school's chancellor and athletic director both insisted yesterday that money wasn't the only factor for the move. Both emphasized that the ability to get greater exposure by playing football games in earlier time slots will help, and also the move back to the Big 12 will provide new head coach Deion Sanders and his staff with immediate recruiting advantages. Big questions on the realignment landscape now come from the West. Pac-12, can it survive as a Power 5 league? Conference will be down to nine schools beginning next year. They do not have a new media rights deal in place beyond the coming year, and they stand by. Could be more movement coming. NFL early training camp injuries continuing to mount in Cincinnati. Bengals star quarterback Joe Burrow carted off the practice field after he came up hobbling on a scramble yesterday. 26-year-old franchise QB hopped on one leg, then went to the ground after a play near the end of their afternoon practice. Head coach Zach Taylor later said it was a calf injury. He will be further evaluated today. Meanwhile, in Miami, Dolphins cornerback Jalen Ramsey, one of their big offseason acquisitions, suffered a left knee injury. He will undergo surgery on his meniscus. That comes with a 6 to 8 week timeline of recovery. He's expected to miss the start of the regular season. Dallas Cowboys dealing with a couple of camp injuries as well, starting with starting safety Donovan Wilson suffered a calf strain during the team's first practice on Wednesday. He is expected to miss at least 4 weeks. Cowboys rookie tight end Luke Luke Schoonmaker will also miss the first phase of training camp because of a foot injury that predated his joining the team or being drafted by the team. Head coach Mike McCarthy said yesterday that they're hopeful that the team's second-round pick out of Michigan this past April will get back to the team while they're still in Oxnard, added he does not have a specific timeline. Cowboys' third-round pick was former Longhorn linebacker DeMarvion Overshown. According to early reports, he is already turning some heads. 90th pick in last April's draft, flashing versatility and a willingness to do whatever it takes to get on the field. And defensive coordinator Dan Quinn's defense, according to Quinn, former college safety brings excellent coverage skills to that position. There's a strong possibility that Overshown will see time as an extra linebacker in nickel packages, maybe even in the secondary in some base formations. Baseball. Both the Astros and Rangers enjoyed the day off. First place Texas opens a series in San Diego tonight. Houston will host the Tampa Rays this weekend. LA Angels superstar Shohei Ohtani certainly didn't have the day off yesterday. Day after the team announced officially that the two-way star would not be traded before next Tuesday's deadline. Ohtani rewarded them in both games of a doubleheader in Detroit. Game one, Ohtani tossed a complete game one-hit shutout in a 6-0 victory. Game two, as the DH, he belted two home runs, lead the Halos to an 11-4 win. In a sweep of the doubleheader, he leads the majors with 38 big flies now. Round Rock dropped another one last night in El Paso, falling 10-9 in 10 innings.
This segment brought to you by UBO Business Services. Great people, great service, endless possibilities. That's UBO Business Services. Visit them at ubeo.com.
All right, so there we go. I was also seeing this on social media and just got a text that there's an active shooter situation at the Tesla Gigafactory here in town. I did see a tweet of that with police running to arriving and telling everyone to leave immediately. So we'll keep you posted on that. That's a scary situation. Now to our east. That Gigafactory is a massive, massive building off of the tollway there near 290. So we'll keep an eye on that story developing. But a lot of developing news and stories, obviously, picking up with the Colorado conversation from yesterday. Injuries, just hope the best for Joe Burrow, Buck.
Calf injury. I mean, it's going to go all the way into the season, maybe second game or third game or so. But
you think it's that severe?
And plus, remember, that's a dude who hasn't had much preseason games anyway. I mean, he's only played in a couple. You know, we had COVID. He had the abdominal strain. He was coming off a knee where he played like three or four plays. So he doesn't – for him, the preseason doesn't mean very much. When the season starts, that guy was ready to go.
Yeah, he always has. You know, last year in the first practice, he's had to have an appendectomy.
Right.
Had to go have emergency surgery. Two training camps ago, he was still recovering from that knee injury, mm-hmm. So they were very careful with him. He didn't do much in the preseason. And, yeah, year before that was COVID. So, yeah, Joe Burrow used to not participating. But, you know, we'll see. Obviously, the Bengals will hope he can get back for the start of the season. That's still not it's 5 weeks, 6 weeks away. We'll see how severe that thing is. A little sore, but...
Active shooter was a false alarm, by the way.
False alarm?
Yeah, as of 6 minutes ago.
All right, great. Great to hear that news. Thank
Absolutely.
You, Todd. Great news. Great news. Great news. That's always a scary situation, wherever it is, and certainly when it's in your hometown. But false alarm on the situation at the Gigafactory out east. So there you go. I did not see the report that it could already – they already know that it's going to be an 8-week injury. Is that right?
They've talked like at least to the beginning of the season. At least the first game or so.
No, I had not seen that. I saw there would be a further evaluation.
Just hope there's no tear, no major
right.
tear.
Right, I mean, yeah,
in
if you tear your
muscle.
Calf. And obviously, you know, observers, media that were on hand already noticed he had a sleeve mm-hmm. that he was wearing on that. And then after practice, Zach Taylor, the head coach, talked about how, you know, some guys are sore after the first practice. So
could calf injury mean Achilles, though?
That's why they say
that sometimes.
Yeah, right. Well, that was
look into it further.
Yeah, watching the video, that was the first initial feel or fear. Like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
You hoped immediately. Okay, calf strain, which as I talked about yesterday, anytime I would play beer league softball, that's what I would do. Coming out of the batter's box, trying to leg one out. But you know, he hobbled. But yeah, the fear would be that it would be an Achilles, and that would be it. That'd be the whole season, and that would be a nightmare for the Bengals. Terrible for the NFL. But, of course, they're negotiating. We just talked this week about Justin Herbert's new contract with the L.A. Chargers, and he will be the highest-paid player in the National Football League until Joe Burrow gets his new deal. Next thing you know, we're dealing with another Joe Burrow injury. But as you said, this is not uncommon for him. If it is just a calf, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know how that hurts his money. I mean, Joe Burrow was on his way to not looking for a massive contract, but helping out, you know, his team by making sure he had all the players around him to have success. But when you come up 3 or 4 years in a row, E, where these things happen to you, whether it's you know, just coincidence or not, you start to think, maybe I need to make sure I get all the money I can get, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean,
I may have a short-lived career in the NFL.
I would think, and again, I'm not the agent, but if or the team, but if it's an Achilles, well, it's a year-long injury, yeah, it would impact the negotiations.
There's no doubt about that.
At that point. Now, he still would hopefully make a full recovery. He's only 26 years old.
He's already made recoveries from knee surgeries.
Yeah, well, but again, it's at that point, if it's a calf strain, it's calf strain. You
right.
deal with that, and you're going to have the quarterback and your quarterback for the bulk of the football season. And all you're going to do there is be very cautious to not make that a lingering injury. Make sure it's fully recovered before he returns. And, you know, any calf.
Boy, they got some big games early in the season, too. Their first three or four games are just, you know, they're within the division and stuff. They need to get off to a good start, but they need to get off to a healthy start with their quarterback. They can't have him going in there at 70-60% trying to play in games because they're big, important games.
Well, and just remember,
it's a long season.
Last year was the appendectomy, so he didn't
right.
have any training camp practice. If you remember, early in the season, they played the Cowboys, right, up in Dallas, up in Arlington. And
they took like three snaps, and that was it. See you later.
Yeah, he emergency surgery. They had to let that fully recover. And so he didn't do much at all in training camp. And it looked like that early. Remember, they were in the Super Bowl the previous year, and they got off to a 1-2 start, and they mm-hmm. just didn't look right. And he looked like he was rusty, as you may imagine. And, by the end of the year, they were, you know, what you would have – and they got things together, but that could be a problem for them right now. And in that conference, man, the AFC, it is – the margins are so slim and thin of what's the difference. In that division even, when you're talking about
– I think they have Cleveland and Baltimore in the first two games.
Yeah. Well, that's your – what is – of the storylines of the AFC North, I mean, what is Cleveland going to be? Can Deshaun Watson get back to anything close to what he was in Houston? If he does, Cleveland's going to be a handful because they can run it with Nick Chubb. They've got great weapons on the outside. You know, the rave reviews in Cleveland early in camp. We know Amari Cooper is there. He's suffered a minor injury, but he'll be back. Elijah Moore. They sent a second-round pick to the Jets to get Elijah Moore.
Yes, they did.
When the Jets were trying to pursue the Aaron Rodgers trade. And Elijah Moore is turning heads, man. That guy was a former high pick of the Browns, or excuse me, the Jets. They really like him to go with David Njoku at tight end and Nick Chubb running the ball, good offensive line. And we know their defense is talented, headlined by Myles Garrett coming off the edge. So Browns are good. Steelers, what are they going to be? You know, you got Mike Tomlin, so you know they'll be tough. And Kenny Pickett in year two. And then, of course, the Baltimore Ravens with Lamar Jackson back, Odell Beckham Jr. there now. I mean, just that division in of itself, they all kind of have a playoff team feel, but they all probably can't make the playoffs. So, yeah, the couple of games early can hurt your push to win a division. And so we'll keep an eye on Joe Burrow as the month of July turns into August and we go from there.
Well, their backup is not going to take him where Joe Burrow could take him. That's
Trevor
just not going to happen.
Yeah, Trevor Simeon.
Is that who it is?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, Joe Burrow's special. Now, I mean, you still have the Jamar Chase.
And they've got a really good team.
Yeah, they've got weapons, and any quarterback can make some things happen in that. But, yeah, it's not Joe Burrow. But, again, if he's healthy and can play for the year and give you the bulk of the season, you'll be good with that. The story in Miami, not as good for Jalen Ramsey. He's out 6 to 8 weeks with a torn meniscus. He was a big acquisition for them to help bolster that defense because that's the scary part of the Miami Dolphins in the AFC. We know the big storyline is Tua, and can Tua Tagovailoa, their quarterback, stay healthy, avoid concussions? If he can, that offense is dynamite, and at some point, sometimes unstoppable offensively. They're trying to bolster their defense. They traded for Bradley Chubb from the Broncos last year during the season to bring more pass rush. The idea was to bring in Jalen Ramsey to add to their secondary, to lock people up a little bit, let that pass rush get home. He'll be back, but it likely will be, like you just said with Joe Burrow, week 1, week 2. 6 to 8 week injury. He's a veteran player. He'll roll back and be healthy and be ready to go. But that is one to watch for sure. So,
well, just a meniscus is better than having an ACL, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, again, let's cross your fingers.
The way he went
Joe.
Down, the way they showed him, I was like, oh, no.
Well, yeah, those non-contact knee injuries. But then when you hear calf, but that also leads, oh, man, is there an Achilles issue, some type of tendon problem? We'll follow that with Joe Burrow and the National Football League. Get more from Cowboy Camp coming up. And obviously the big story in these parts and around college football is the Colorado move. Told you yesterday that the Board of Regents meeting was really a formality. Decision had been made. They are going to jump to the Big 12 and back to the Big 12 for all the reasons we just mentioned in the headlines. It's more money. It's more stability. It's better recruiting for Deion Sanders. And, you know, the argument can be made strongly that they should have never left back in 2010. But if you remember the landscape in 2010, you know, that was when the conversation was, you know, Texas and Oklahoma and A&M, everybody was moving to the Pac-12.
That's
like
right.
Everybody was going to the Pac-12. It was going to be the Pac-16 or whatever it was going to become. And that was, you know, Colorado was kind of caught up in the, man, our conference is about to fall apart. So we should jump now and get ahead of that.
Yeah, and everybody wants Texas and Oklahoma to come to the Pac-12. We might as well get in it ourselves.
Yeah,
we can get
they
in
were,
and let's go. We're there.
They were trying to anticipate that, oh, my gosh, and the whole acrimony within the Big 12 conference at the time that was going on between the schools, and Nebraska was leaving, and you know, A&M jumped over to the SEC. So they jumped in that whole window, and it was a bad decision. I mean, it really was. I mean, the program, and football program for sure, has not been close to the same since they moved out of the Big 12. And you know, the reasons we've talked about for why they declined over 12 or 13 years is what the athletic director and the chancellor said yesterday. You know, we want to play TV football games in the early window at 11 o'clock. We want to put our, you know, showcase our team in primetime spots, and we want to be able to recruit the state of Texas. According to some reports out of Denver and Boulder, you know, Deion Sanders gave this move full approval. Because he knows and wants to be able to recruit this state.
For sure.
And, you know, every coach in America wants to be able to recruit the state of Texas well, as fertile as it is. So they'll be, now think about that game this year, Buck, with TCU. That takes a heightened interest because they'll play TCU coming up to start the season, and they're there in Fort Worth. And obviously that will not be a conference game this year. Following starting next year, it will be.
It will be a recruiting game, that's for
no
sure.
No doubt about it for Deion Sanders. So that game is coming up there in Fort Worth week one. Now takes a new twist. And yes, obviously the next step is, you know, for both sides. Does the Big, I don't think for a second the Big 12 is going to stay at 13. You know, this is the time to move. You've coaxed one school to make the move. Now you've further destabilized the Pac-12, which is a mess. Could there be more? We've talked Four Corners schools. There's also talk of those aren't willing to jump. You know, maybe a UConn to make it a 14-team league to the east. You know, the basketball opportunities and, you know, the Pac-12 is just, it's amazing to hear the comments of the commissioner there that as of last week he was confident that there, you know, there was going to be no movement. I mean, you know, Buck, little old me here in Austin, Texas, if I keep hearing from people I know within the Big 12 that there absolutely is a chance that Colorado could move and Arizona could move, George Kliavkov has to know that. I mean, there's no way he doesn't. Now, he may have just said that at media days to calm waters and, you know, say the right thing. But, I mean, it's been common knowledge that the Big 12 has been pursuing Colorado for a year. Colorado had interest all that time. And as we said throughout the whole course of this process, Colorado was patiently waiting for some type of media rights deal that they could compare to what the Big 12 was offering. And that media rights deal never came.
Yeah, sometimes it's probably better off. If there's nothing to say, don't say anything. Don't start just making things, you know, just talk about what, you know, sorry that certain teams are gone. You know, we're going to have a strong conference, but to act like nothing's going to happen.
Well,
and it's happening right underneath your nose.
And, you know, I mean, he's aloof or not aware and believing that there nothing's going on. I mean, that seems silly to me. It seemed obvious that negotiate. And again, it's all based on the media rights deal, but George Kliavkov was saying, you know, we're going to put our media rights deal in front of our membership here shortly.
And like you said, at one time everybody was trying to head to the Pac-12. Let's get out there. Let's get going that direction.
Well,
now all of a sudden they're all scrambling. You're talking about a scramble now that Colorado's gone?
Well, look, if you go back to when Larry Scott was the commissioner and we almost had the Pac-16, right, with the schools from the state of Texas moving, A&M put the brakes on that, and then jumped to the SEC a year later. Part of the reason Larry Scott, the previous commissioner in the Pac-12, wanted to do that is the same thing we're talking about right now, is to get his conference playing games in the Central Time Zone, playing games in the Eastern Time Zone, not just playing West Coast games.
Right.
I know if you live in the West Coast and that's your time zone, that you think that's not a big factor. When you start sitting with TV executives at Fox and ESPN, that's a big deal. That's a lot of money. They don't want to just play 6 and 9 o'clock games on the West Coast. They want TV games early. They, you know, the big noon Sunday game on Fox, the early window 11 o'clock games on ESPN are huge. The 2:30 game's big, and that was part of it. Even for back then, I mean, Texas fans weren't a fan. A lot of Texas fans weren't a fan of the move because they were going to be playing those late West Coast games. The Pac-12 was trying to align with the with Texas and the Texas schools for that very reason, and they still haven't changed that equation. All the way until 2023, they still are locked into the Pacific time zone as a conference, and it's hurting them terribly when it comes to media rights and media negotiations. And you know,
there was a huge stink about that with fans. They're like, "We're going to catch games that start at 9? Are you kidding me?"
Yeah, no. I mean, they've tried to be creative. And Colorado sitting right in the middle of the country. They're in the West, but they're still more regionally proportioned to Texas and to the schools in the Big 12. They're going to say they're all too happy to. They'll play 11 o'clock games. They'll play 2:30 games. They want to be in the big windows, and you can also play primetime games in Boulder. That's fine too. But again, for the TV partners who are paying the freight, that's where these media rights dollars come from. They want four windows a day, a Saturday. They want to have an 11, a 2:30, a 6, and a 9 if you need it. But how many 9 o'clock games does Texas play? None, right? They're And as you know, most college football fans are asleep by 9 o'clock because they've been going since 11 o'clock watching football. Only people up are Ty in there, staying up trying to chase his bets and, you know, win some money on a late Pac-12 game, trying to make up for losses potentially early. Now, some people stay up to midnight to watch every single game, but those numbers are too few.
Sure.
And, of course, when you're a regional conference like that and you only are getting your regional coverage – ESPN, Fox, the TV partners, they want national, big cross-country TV audiences, which, you know, everybody tunes in to watch the big noon game on Fox.
Well, Colorado now has a chance. Now they can come, you know, play in TCU. Now they can come into the state of Texas.
Sure.
They weren't staying in that conference. Even if they got a deal there, that was really going to be hard. They need to stay to Texas.
Yeah,
they always did. When they were good, they were getting kids out, like I said, like, Fort Worth and that Metroplex area, they were coming all over the state. Lots of kids went from Texas to play football in Boulder.
Even back when you were coaching.
Right.
And when you were coaching, I was coming into college, and all my buddies that were high recruits, they were all taking visits to Colorado. Colorado was the program.
That was one of your five. You were going to Boulder.
Everybody took a visit to Boulder.
Even if you weren't going, you were going to take a trip to Boulder.
Yeah, and a lot of them went there. I know my good friend Dan Neal, who I went to high school with, who ended up at Texas playing for you guys. He took a trip to Boulder. He loved it. He thought it was a real option for him. We've heard Casey Studdard, who was coming to Texas all along, but he's from that area. He liked the opportunity at Boulder. He wasn't going to go there, but still, it was an it school. And ever since they've left this conference, they're not. Now, the idea is with the leadership at Colorado now, with Deion Sanders in place and primetime and all that exposure, this move, they can get back to being, you know, an it school for potential recruits. And that's really the lifeblood of any football program is talent.
They're going to be it, all right. For the first year, they're going to get it. That's what they're going to get.
Yeah. Now, Deion's planning to be good quick, but we'll see. All right. We've got some more college football to get to, including our friend Bobby Burton over at Inside Texas with a report on Gary Patterson. Is Gary, at this point, almost into August, mulling a potential return to the Texas coaching staff in some role? We'll get you details on that coming up. Obviously left the program and after his 1 year last year. I'll get you details there. Also back into what's going to happen out in the Pac-12, what happens with Arizona, Utah, Arizona State. What about Oregon and Washington? Those are conversations. I would put you this little seed in your head that Brett Yormark last summer had two separate meetings with Phil Knight. So, you know, my conventional thought is that the Big Ten is going to come calling on Oregon and Washington. If they don't, and the Big Ten is going to be happy with where they are, don't rule out the idea of Brett Yormark getting real aggressive and going after Oregon as well, because, you know, he's an aggressive guy, and he understands what that brand can bring.
Yes, he
from
does.
The Great Northwest and Phil Knight and Nike and all the alliances there. Obviously, Washington up in Seattle as well. So we'll keep our eyes on the conference realignment conversation. We'll take your thoughts as we get you into a Friday. We'll have some fun as well. One of the greatest comedies ever released was released on this day back in 45 years ago. We'll get you details on that coming up in our B&E Facts of the Day segment. It's B&E on the Horn.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Props to all the working people out there going to work this morning. And it's Austin, Texas, so most of you might put in a half day. Half day, maybe.
That would be it.
half day and into your weekend.
Friday.
Of course, some of you will go 10, 12 hours today, I would guess. But, you know, we appreciate you being with us. It's a Friday morning. It's B&E, final weekend of July on tap. That means NFL training camps all over the place. Injuries a big topic. Also, Longhorns going to camp next week. August 2nd will be their first practice, and they'll be getting after it in the all-gas, no-excuses season, as we've described it. Steve Sarkisian has not backed off of those expectations, that anything less than a Big 12 championship would, I think, be a disappointing season for the Longhorns where they sit.
I know it would be for the fans.
Well, I think even if you listen to Sark, he feels like this is a team on a mission and thinks this team is ready to make amends for some of the late-game, fourth-quarter issues of last year. If they can fix that and rectify those things, get better quarterback play more consistently, better passing game more consistently, there's no reason this team can't be playing in that Big 12 title game come December. But the real work begins Tuesday. I know, sorry, I'm coaching, you know this, Buck. The real work hopefully began through the spring.
Oh, yeah.
Winter workouts,
winter
summer.
Workouts.
And you just pick it up and go.
Those dreadful winter workouts.
But as I teased on the way to the timeout, our friend Bobby Burton, over at Inside Texas on 3 Sports, has a story out this morning that he's been told that former TCU head coach Gary Patterson is mulling a return to college football, possibly even in a reprised role with the Longhorns. Of course, in his first year away from Fort Worth, Patterson was a special assistant to Steve Sarkisian during last season, had a noticeable impact on the improvement of the defense and Pete Kwiatkowski and what they were doing on that side of the ball. Primarily worked with that defense, helping with various coverages in the secondary. That's what he's known best for. It's a short story from Bobby, but again, he's in the story, he said Patterson told multiple people close to him today that he has yet to decide whether he'll return to Austin this fall, but that the decision needs to come quickly in the next several days as Texas is set to open up fall camp on August the 2nd.
So yeah, and he's going to want to be there when it starts. He's going to want to be there at that opening meeting.
Well, you wonder if he just got some time away and enjoyed that, but
oh, yeah.
You know,
it's that time of the year for him.
He didn't book a tour for his music.
No, that's that clock. That football clock is.
It's ticking.
Yeah, that thing.
Shark Week. That's what Casey Sutter's been.
Yeah,
you know,
alarm
starts happening, and that gets the people going.
That alarm. The alarm goes off. It's time to get ready to start those practices in summertime for him.
Yeah, the clock ticking.
Yep.
Coach's clock says, well, what am I doing? It's July. I need to be in a camp somewhere. So we'll keep an eye on that. Bobby also in the story said that this offseason, Gary Patterson had already turned down multiple overtures from other schools, including one from USC and Lincoln Riley, to come west. And obviously, you know, already Cliff Kingsbury's already there. So we'll keep an eye on that story. Could be a developing. We know Texas has already added, you know, Paul Chryst as an offensive special assistant. Joe DeCamillis as a special teams assistant for Jeff Banks, and Payam Sadat has come in on the defensive side to assist there, and he's one of the old school architects of the Desert Swarm defense out at Arizona with Dick Tomey. He comes in with a lot of knowledge on pass rush and edge rush, which is what the Longhorns are trying to generate. To get Gary Patterson, because many times last year Steve Sarkisian described Gary as just like a second head coach, and you know, somebody he could just bounce things off of and talk to, and just another set of eyes helping him with blind spots and things of that nature. Apparently the relationship was really strong enough that at this time of year maybe Gary Patterson considering a return. And as you know, and you've always said, you worked with his now wife. She's a Longhorn graduate.
Absolutely.
Loves Austin, loves UT. So we'll keep an eye on that developing conversation. I also mentioned, as we were talking injuries in training camps around the NFL, you know, there's already been several reports I've seen of DeMarvion Overshown, the Cowboys' third-round pick, pick 90, flashing early in camp for Dan Quinn and that defense that he is, you know, doing his thing. Very athletic.
Yep.
You know,
do all the things that he wants to see in a guy like that. He can play multiple positions.
Yeah, I mean.
Got a great skill set at a lot of things. That guy may be even in your secondary somewhere.
Positionless football,
man.
Right? I mean, the idea, and Dan Quinn has been on the forefront of that on the defensive side of the ball, that, you know, don't lock a guy into just one position if he can
not
do
a
multiple
great
things. Yeah, and someone like DeMarvion, and the early thought is, you know, he's former safety who moved to linebacker, but can use that versatility at the pro level where he can, you know, be a linebacker in nickel and dime packages potentially.
Oh, he's big to try to throw around and over.
But then, you know, in the base, maybe be a kind of a hybrid between a linebacker and a safety, covering tight ends, You know, being able to support the run but also cover. And as we know, DeMarvion, like Micah Parsons, he can get after the quarterback too. So if you want to use him in that role, Cowboys are really excited about DeMarvion Overshown helping their defense. And, you know, that defense needed another weapon like that. If Mozzie Smith, the defensive tackle they took in the first round, is as advertised at the point of attack at D-tackle, and then DeMarvion can become another weapon built around Micah Parsons, DeMarcus Lawrence on that defense, Trayvon Diggs in the secondary, you know, this can be the best defense in pro football. Man, there's no doubt about that. They've been close to it the last few years. That's where the offensive change of, you know, being a little bit more conservative, controlling the ball, a little more of a power running team with play action for Dak Prescott. You understand why that is, because if you have a defense that's that good, you want to protect them as much as you can. Let them win you football games.
Yeah, I mean, he can give Micah Parsons a blow too.
Sure.
The way he plays, I mean, those different positions. We always liked his skill set, even when he was a safety. He just got so daggum big. You know, last time when we were at Media Days, at the Big 12 Media Days a couple of years ago, he was a monster. He got like a defensive end.
Who, DeMarvion?
Yeah.
No, he's a big dude. I mean, I laugh every time I talk with my friend Mike Craven that I do the show, the Eyes on Texas multicast with every week. Mike used to, he's now the senior writer at Dave Campbell's Texas Football. And hopefully, by the way, you check out our latest episode of the Eyes on Texas multicast. It is out and available. Really good stuff. You can find it on YouTube and iTunes and Spotify. It's Eyes on Texas multicast, powered by Grande Equipment. But the Mike tells the story that he was, because before he was at Dave Campbell's, he was the Austin American Statesman, and he curated the Fab 55 list, right? The top 55 high school players in the state. So Mike would go all over the state, watch high school players, and he told me the story of when we went to ARP, Texas, tiny little East Texas ARP high school, and watched DeMarvion Overshown. And, you know, the coaches were fearful he's going to hurt people. I mean, he was just so much bigger than everyone. And he was one of those loves contact guys. He was just a heat-seeking missile. He's going to knock people down. And, you know, just coaches, you know, even in practice, had to be careful with him. And you know, that was a 2A or 3A high school at the time.
I can imagine he'd destroy a 147-pound running back.
Mike says it was just like, oh, my gosh, that's not fair. And then he came to Texas and part of that great defensive back recruiting class that Tom Herman put together early in his time at Texas that featured Caden Stearns and, he was a part of that.
That dude just outgrew the position.
Foster came in with that group, B.J. Foster. And yeah, by design, but part of the problem was they didn't pick a position immediately, right? He bounced. He started as a safety, then they tried him at linebacker, and then what are you going to use him as? Finally, his final year, which was last year, he was really good. He started to settle in at that role next to Jalen Ford, and just attack the football, make plays, be an aggressive, run stopper, but also in those. He was so effective on those little short, quick screen passing game plays and then running after quarterbacks.
Oh, no, he could run you down now.
And I think the Cowboys look at DeMarvion and think, you know what, his best football is to come. He's still a very young player.
I believe that's exactly right. His best football is to come. And I mean, he's going to be with Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn knows an awful lot about defensive football.
Yeah, and then, you know, I know going into the draft in April, Cowboys fans and Longhorn fans who are, you know, one and the same, they were hoping Bijan Robinson ended up a Longhorn or a Cowboy. Man, wouldn't it be great if we get Bijan? But obviously that didn't happen. He was gone by the 8th pick to the Falcons. But, there he was at 90.
They didn't need him.
Well, they might. We'll see. Tony Pollard is their best and most proven running back. And Zeke Elliott is not there. He's sending text messages to the running back saying,
good luck. Outside the fence.
Good luck.
His hands on the chain link fence.
Ty, you still holding out hope that Zeke shows up at some point? Where's Zeke going to be?
I think he'll come home eventually, midseason.
Maybe he just didn't want to go to California. He'll just wait until they come back.
He's more of a Mexico guy.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, who isn't at this point? I'll get down to Mexico. It is one of the notes from Cowboys camp that I found, I took note of, was that their rookie tight end, Luke Schoonmaker, who they took with a second round pick. They took Mozzie Smith out of Michigan with their first pick late in the first round. Then they turned around and took his teammate, Luke Schoonmaker, a tight end for Jim Harbaugh's program. But he is going to miss the start of training camp because of a foot injury that predates his time with the team. And this is the first anybody's heard of this. Second-round pick, you take a player in the second round, he's expected to come in and hit your depth chart and, you know, be there with Jake Ferguson at that tight end position, Peyton Hendershot, and, giving your offense a jolt. Well, you know, the note here says Mike McCarthy is definitely hopeful that he'll practice in Oxnard, definitely making progress, but do not have a timeline for you. So when he says predates his joining the team, well, that would mean it was an injury that
pre-draft
that he came
injury.
With.
Yeah, what's the deal? Come on, y'all.
And the drafts, so if it predates April and it didn't get, you know, he doing his visits and whatnot, combine work, you know, you wonder what that is. And here we are almost into August now, and they still don't have a timeline on it. I would take a note of that. That sounds a little bit concerning, big picture for your second round draft pick. But
Turd Ferguson's got it under control. 70 catches.
Well, remember, the Cowboys want to run a lot of two and three tight end sets. They want to be a power running team and be able to, wear down defenses. And
this guy's used to being a run blocker too.
And you know what you get when you're getting a Michigan player. That's one thing. It's one of the reasons Michigan is putting so many guys into the draft of late, because you know what type of player you're getting out of that Jim Harbaugh program. Mozzie Smith. Big and powerful at the point of attack, a movable object, but just with like tremendous strength and agility. Cowboys really like him. But then, you know, Shoemaker, you know, he's a Michigan tight end. He's going to be physical. He'll block.
Yep.
He'll hit you, get you up in your face, but also can be a receiving threat as well.
It's not good to hear about a foot injury.
Yeah, that's never good. Don't like that at all for the Dallas Cowboys. All right, so we'll get back into some football. Cowboys in camp. Longhorns going to camp next week, and we'll certainly count down those days to that. We'll get back into the Big 12 conversation as well with Brett Yormark making moves. Colorado is in. Who is next is the big question. It feels like the Pac-12 is coming apart. And can the because I don't think anybody believes you, like, percentage chance in your mind, Bob, that when 2024 comes around next summer into next fall, the Big 12 is a 13-team league.
Maybe more.
You think so? You think it could be 13?
Yeah,
my percentage would be very low that they're going to sit at 13 between now and next football season.
Next football season.
It'll be at least 14.
Yes, at least. I've got to believe that if this Oregon talk is true, then why not Utah? Why not bring them, what I'm saying?
Because I think it's more likely to be
Washington.
In my mind, it's more likely that it's a 16-team league than a 13-team league.
Yeah, for sure.
But again, the schools you bring in have to add value. I mean, the current members of the Big 12 aren't just going to add teams because you got to split the money another way. But what I've been told is that the media partners at ESPN are you know, if it's the right schools, okay, we'll make them a full, because they're paying the rate. You know, if it's a school that they think brings value, they'll be willing to cover that. And you know, so the schools,
they probably love to bring Arizona without Arizona State, but. That seems like a package deal.
Well, at some point, the patience will wear thin at Arizona, especially
they'll be the next to jump. I think,
especially
even before
if
Oregon.
Well, think about this: if you're Brett Yormark, wouldn't you, if you had your ideal selections, wouldn't you want to take Arizona, Utah, and Oregon, and make it and be done?
Yeah, but you got to have Arizona State seems
maybe
to be
not.
Sitting in there.
Maybe
oh.
not. Arizona State can join their Mountain West Pac-12.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
If they don't want to jump, I mean, because again.
Yeah, it's not like they've been knocking it out of park football-wise lately anyway.
I mean, think about it this way. Because we've talked about the four corner schools and adding Arizona State, and Utah. What if we could replace Arizona State with Oregon?
Oh, yes, immediately.
And I think ESPN and the TV partners would be more on board with that.
Sure.
Not, and again, when we start talking about basketball, Oregon's got a really good basketball program as well. You know, it's one of those.
Is that the group with the ugly floor?
Oh, yeah. Really ugly floor. Terrible floor. But so if you were adding Colorado, which is the Denver market 17 in the media market rankings, you know, Arizona does bring, you would think, Greater Phoenix, Tucson, which is market 11. Utah is Salt Lake City, which is a top 20 market. But it's also, when you're trying to build for the future and natural rivalries.
Some rivalries, yes.
You're putting Utah with BYU as a conference game annually to go with Texas, you know, losing Texas and Oklahoma. You're looking for those big rivalry games. The Holy War becomes that. And, boy, if the Big Ten doesn't come calling for Oregon, how about that for your full conference and Phil Knight and all that brings the
Arizona
the
State would be the last ones into me. I'd rather have Stanford than have Arizona State, but. We'll just see how the state of Arizona feels about that.
But it's
about the money, and it's about the TV.
I think those would be the first. Now, Brett Yormark might tell you he would rather have UConn because he's an East Coast guy, and he thinks.
Or basketball-wise?
For basketball, getting into that East Coast, tap into that New York metro, you know, market and Upper East Coast. But I think the because again the presidents are going to make the decision of the Big 12 even more than Brett Yormark. Brett Yormark will lead the way and do the negotiations. But in the end, you know, if you're Texas Tech, if you're Baylor, if you're TCU, you're more like Oregon in your conference. That becomes a big game every year when you're on the rotating basis, and that gets you to 16. You know, you had Colorado. You again, they're talking about Western flanks of your conference, but Oregon helps in all regards. They're a big time football program. That, you know, was super up with Chip Kelly, has dipped a little bit, but, you know, they can be a that's a national program with the Phil Knight exposure and what comes with it. And the basketball program is really growing. And we know the NIL rules are, you know, flexible for them.
Well, they love that.
And so, you know, it's that would be a power move if the Big 12 were to land that. Obviously, Texas and Oklahoma are off to the SEC, and they won't be worrying about that. But the remaining schools, those would be your best three next picks: Utah, Oregon, Arizona, and that would mean you'd have to pry Arizona away from Arizona State, which I think there's a willingness to go there if Arizona State wants to be stubborn and go down with the Pac-12's sinking ship. All right, there we go. There's some conference realignment. We've got the Cowboys, Longhorns coming up. B&E Facts of the Day, including one of the greatest comedies of all time, released on this day 45 years ago. We'll let you help us rank where that ranks in your all-time comedies. Coming back on B&E.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Oh, yeah. 80s anthem from the boys from Motley Crue. Vince Neil and the gang. Tommy Lee on drums. Oh, Home Sweet Home. I will have to say that was a big song of my childhood, Bo.
No, I was not a Motley Crue fan.
Well, I can see that. You were older.
Yeah.
I was middle school into high school when Motley Crue hit, and I was a pretty big fan.
Did you enjoy that movie that came out a few years ago?
I didn't see that movie.
You never saw the Motley Crue movie?
I told you, I watched the first two episode and a half of the Pam and Tommy Lee mockumentary that they did.
That was enough for you, wasn't it?
Well, like, literally, Tommy Lee, he started talking to
his thing on Bob?
Yeah. Like, there was a scene in episode two where there's his man thing, and it's talking to him. And I'm like, okay, that's over. I'm done. I'm out.
Come on, little Johnny.
You might not like the movie, then. It's a little raunchy.
Well, Motley Crue was completely raunchy. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Again, my poor mother. My brother and I were big Kiss fans, and all of a sudden, her baby's like a Motley Crue fan. Like,
wow.
What is this young Catholic boy? What's going on up in his room? But, you know, we were okay. But, yes. All right, so some B&E facts of the day, Buck. Obviously, it's a day-by-day conversation with Shohei Ohtani. He does something no one's ever done before, seemingly every day, and yesterday was, you know, another one. First player to throw a shutout in one game of a doubleheader, then hit a home run in the other game of a doubleheader. Shohei did that. Again, I don't think it's any surprise on the day that they announced, or the day before they announced, that he is not going to be traded, and they're locking in, and they're going to be aggressive and making moves. And when after Lucas Giolito, this guy shows up and says, all right, I'll reward you. Complete game, one hitter. All nine innings, shutout, one hit allowed. That's pretty good. To give the pitching staff a jolt, save the bullpen in a doubleheader. That's one of your biggest fears, is just wearing your bullpen out. Didn't need it. And then go out and hit, as a DH, hit two home runs and lead them to an 11-4 win over the Detroit Tigers. So two quick wins, and Shohei is just indescribable what that guy does.
Back up the truck.
Back up the truck. And I think Artie Moreno would be willing to do that. The Angels, they have to show that they're in this thing to win this thing. They're not in this thing.
They're out there buying, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. But part of buying, because as we've said, I mean, if you're just looking at the organization, if Shohei Ohtani doesn't re-sign with this team, this is a bad plan. I mean, you're not trading your biggest asset to rebuild your farm system and bring in, you know, four or five young players.
Right, and it's the worst plan to keep him.
If this plan helps you re-sign him.
Yes, this is the plan, yes.
Even if you don't make the World Series this year, then it's the right move. But if you just traded your two of your top prospects to get Lucas Giolito, so you further depleted your weak farm system, and then you lose Shohei this offseason, you're way back, you know, you're taking even further steps back as an organization. But obviously they've made the decision that if we go all in and we go for this thing, that will be what Shohei wants, and maybe we'll re-sign him. And maybe he'll come back, even if we don't win the World Series this year. Also in the B&E...
Well, they're playing their best baseball right now anyway, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, they're playing... They're over 500, and they're in it. And, you know, they're with yesterday's win, I think they're 6 games back of the Rangers, who were idle yesterday in the West, and they're 3 games back of a wild card spot. So, sure, they're by no means out of it. And they will get Mike Trout back here coming up in August at some point from his wrist injury. And now they have Lucas Giolito with Shohei Ohtani atop their rotation. That's not bad. That isn't bad. I still think the team has some holes in it, but I think it's showing well that, you know, Shohei wants to be on a team that's trying to go win the World Series. That's pretty clear. Also from the facts of the day, U.S. Women's National Team bucked that 1-1 draw versus the Netherlands. 6.43 million viewers on Fox, the most watched group stage match ever on U.S. English TV. So everyone tuning in to see the U.S.
Women's. When they played the Netherlands last time, was that in the finals or the semifinals? The last time Women's World Cup was around. They played before.
Netherlands are good, and that's they're in their group.
I thought that may have been the last time they played. That was a huge game.
But it looks like both of those teams will get out of the group stage. They're sitting atop that group E with 4 points apiece. And USA has a game with Portugal coming up that's very important. Netherlands will play
Vietnam,
who they should beat. So, you know, two of the four teams get out of the group. I think right now the Netherlands and the U.S. are in a good spot.
Ladies are excited. They're getting paid the same amount as the men now.
Well, you're bringing eyeballs. Most watched group stage match ever on U.S. English TV. That's what it's about. Turn on televisions.
For both men and women?
It doesn't distinguish that here, but that's from front office sports. All right, we'll come back. We'll tell you which movie, we ran out of time here, which movie came out, comedy, 45 years ago this day, July 28th, and get your thoughts, Buck, where it ranks as your on your all-time comedy list. We'll have that for you, plus some highlights. Plus, continuing to talk Colorado and the move to the Big 12. What does it mean? What's next for the Big 12 and the Pac-12? Discussions continuing on B&E.